You're listening to a special edition of the Radio Cafe on the Santa Fe New Mexican. My name is Mary Charlotte Domondi. During the COVID-19 pandemic, we'll be bringing you a variety of programs on subjects related to the outbreak here in New Mexico and beyond. You can find more at radiocafe.org. And if you want to write with any ideas and questions, you can write to feedback@radiocafe.org. We're talking today with Dr. Stuart Kaufman. He's a medical doctor, a complex systems research scientist, a MacArthur Fellow, a Fellow of the Royal Society of Canada, author of 6 books and countless scientific papers, and he lives here in Santa Fe. Because of social distancing, we talked by phone. Welcome, Dr. Stuart Kaufman.
Thank you very much.
So viruses and contagious diseases are not the only things that spread. Wildfires spread, rumors spread, misinformation spreads, trends and opinions. And all of this, the math of that, has been studied scientifically. Is the math of all those kinds of spread more or less the same?
It's very similar. It really is. It's very interesting. The easiest image for me to picture is a forest fire. So imagine that when a tree catches on fire, the sparks spread 30 feet. And the trees are maybe 10 feet apart, and you have a dense forest of many square miles. If one tree catches on fire, the fire will spread throughout the entire forest. Now imagine instead that the trees are 60 feet apart and sparks only go 30 feet. If a tree catches on fire, the fire won't spread. So somewhere between 10 feet apart and 60 feet apart, the behavior changes radically. Mathematically, that's called a phase transition. It's roughly when the trees are around 30 feet apart. It goes from spreading to not spreading. And it's roughly the same thing with rumors, and it's the same thing with viruses.
So coronavirus spreads on droplets that go from person to person in the air, and the equivalent of the forest fire, the tree analogy, is the 6-foot away number that everybody has been talking about, and that seems sort of to be the magic number. So with 6 feet, basically, the coronavirus is far enough that each of us is not catching fire, so to speak, from another person who might have it?
Yes, roughly. There's lots of ways of being, quote, 6 feet apart. One of them is that we're literally 6 feet apart. A more general way is that we can be, quote, 6 feet apart if people stay at home. Some people are in isolation. Some people are in quarantine. We don't go to the stores very often, as opposed to not being in quarantine, going to the stores every day and going to restaurants.
There was a recent study from a team led by Neil Ferguson, who's a British epidemiologist and mathematical biologist at Imperial College in London. And he and his colleagues studied how this disease spreads. And it is basically said that if we all do social distancing at the rate of 80% or more, the disease will stop spreading at an exponential rate and level off. But less than 80% social distancing will not be effective. That's the phase transition you were just talking about. What is this magical number, 80%, and what does it actually mean in terms of going about our daily lives?
The work on the phase transition is by Mikhail Prokopenko at the University of Sydney. So just to explain it, he made a model of Australia and people distancing in a variety of ways, including closing schools and closing stores and bars and restaurants, and staying 6 feet apart. So I really want to get across the idea of this phase transition. What Prokopenko found is, for Australia, if social distancing is less than 70%, it does not work at all. There's no point in doing it. You're taking people out of the workforce and shutting down the economy, and there's no increase in savings of lives. So Mikhail has found the phase transition. Then my colleague Gabor Vaté, published a paper about late March. And what Gabor showed is that if you're below the threshold, the disease does spread exponentially. Above it, it doesn't. The rate of increase, if it's exponential, each day the number of sick people, so COVID-19 sick, COVID-19 deaths, goes up by a constant percentage. For example, it goes up at 20% a day, every day. Or it goes up at 10% a day, every day. If that's happening in that area, say around Santa Fe, the disease is growing exponentially, and it says we must institute an above-threshold social distancing. By contrast, what Gabor showed is in China and in Italy. In China, early on, the rate of growth of the disease was increasing at 15% a day. Nearly 15% more people were sick or died each day. Then it slowly declined to 10% increase a day, then to 5%, then to zero. So the disease stopped spreading. In Italy, it started increasing at 25% increase in the number of sick people, the number of deaths a day. Then it dropped to 20, then to 15, and then the data stops. The same thing's happened in New York. At first, the disease was doubling every 2 days, then every 5 days. The really critical thing to get across is that we can know this. We don't have to guess about it. We can just measure it right here in Santa Fe. All we have to do is get the data.
I think one of the very important parts of that is the fact that the rate of growth levels off. Because, I mean, even if you have a fairly slow rate of growth, let's say one person has a disease, it spreads at the rate of 4% a day, that means it doubles every 18 days, then in 2 months, 10 people are infected. That doesn't seem like that much. In 6 months, a little over 1,000 people are infected. Okay, that's a significant number. In 1 year, 1.5 million people are infected at a 4% growth rate. So, I mean, even a low percentage is still exponential growth.
Absolutely. Einstein said the most powerful thing in the world is exponential growth. So you said it very clearly, Mary Charlotte. If the rate of increase is 25% a day, so every day 25% more people get sick, it's exploding exponentially very, very fast. That's lethal. The Ferguson study said that if we did nothing, the disease would spread exponentially. In England, the number of expected deaths would be around 510,000. In the United States, if we did nothing and the disease spread exponentially, the expected number of deaths would be about 2.2 million. And if we did nothing globally, the number of deaths would be about 50 million. Just to scale that, World War II saw 40 million deaths. So stopping the exponential growth of this disease is utterly essential. And the Prokopenko study gets across that the way to do that is to have an above threshold level of social distancing. There's a couple of critical things here, Mary Charlotte. People do not yet know there's a threshold. They don't yet have the image of the fire spreading or not spreading, even though it's perfectly well known.
So the threshold is, as you say, 80% social distancing. What does that actually mean in terms of going about our daily lives? What is 80%, and what is that other 20%?
In the case of the forest fire spreading, it's pretty clear it's like the distance between the trees. People spreading apart is like the trees going more distant. So in Prokopenko's case, we're looking at things like school closings, bar closings, not going to the market more than once a week. This is for everybody. Everybody must do this, not 80% of it. Everybody does not go to the store more than once a week, roughly, does not go to restaurants, does not go to bars, does not gather in large groups.
But again, you talk about this phase transition, anything below something like 75 or 80% social distancing doesn't work. What happens when you do 60% social distancing? Does the disease spread more slowly, but you still have the same number of deaths?
No. What Prokopenko found is that if you do 0% social isolation, 10%, 20%, 30%, 40%, up to 70%, essentially makes no difference. None. Okay, the fire spreads. It's just like the trees being too close together. If the trees are 10 feet apart and the sparks go 30 feet, the fire spread. If the trees are 15 feet apart, the fire still spreads. If they're 20 feet apart, the fire still spreads. When you get beyond 30 feet apart, the fire stops spreading. So the essential idea, and one can see there's a phase transition here, in fancy terms, it's a second-order phase transition, is we don't know that there's a threshold. If we don't know that there's a threshold, then people don't think they have to be compliant in a serious way. What 70 or 80% means, you know, in northern New Mexico, it might be different in northern New Mexico, and it might be different in Holland, and it might be different in New York City because the densities of people are different. The same central idea is there. New Mexico is doing a very good job of social isolation compared to some of our neighboring states. They don't know there's this threshold. I don't think they know. And they don't know that we can measure it by measuring the rate of growth of the disease. the fundamental idea, there's a phase transition. I'm in discussions right now with close friends in Sweden. They are debating whether to do the Swedish plan, which is not to do social isolation, and some of their scientists want to do what the rest of the world is doing. These are close friends in Sweden, and I'm trying to get across to them right now with some frustration. They don't have to debate. What they can do is measure what's happening in Stockholm and in Malmö and in Göteborg and see whether or not the disease is spreading exponentially. If it is, the Stockholm plan is not working. Switch now. People are dying.
There's an interesting example of the Diamond Princess cruise ship, where one passenger had coronavirus, and within 2 months, over 700 people had tested positive. 6 people died. This is a clear example of exponential growth. However, 80% of the people on the ship didn't test positive. How do you understand this? I mean, does that mean that some people are immune from getting it, or they weren't exposed to it, or what happened?
Well, first, nobody's immune. This is a new virus, and a person only becomes immune when he gets the virus and his immune system creates antibodies that block the disease. But people are genetically different. In fact, there's a lot of work going on right now to try to understand, in terms of people's genes, what people with what genes are more susceptible, less susceptible, and get mild forms of the disease or serious. So one part of this is just difference among people. But the other is simply that some of the people on the ship just did not get exposed. After all, they were all living in little cabins. In terms of our forest fire analogy, if the forest is big enough and the fire starts somewhere, it may not spread everywhere because it just doesn't get to the trees 40 miles away. So in part, it just didn't spread to the remaining people. So there's some mixture of their sensitivities and they didn't get exposed. And also there's degrees of exposure. If you get one virus on your tongue, it's different than getting 10,000. You're much more likely to get sick if you've got 10,000.
Now, once the curve starts to flatten and cases are no longer growing at an exponential rate, the curve starts to flatten and go down in terms of the rate of growth, the disease has passed its peak, and there's places like Italy and China where the disease has in fact passed its peak. What then? Can people all start going about their normal lives again? Do we have to keep social distancing for some period of time? How does that work?
Sure, as the curve starts to flatten and go down, things are getting better. When can we open up? So again, Mikhail Prokopenko has some rather alarming news to report. I trust him, but here what he found in his studies, mathematically in the simulations of Australia, if you delay in 3 days starting effective social distancing, it takes 3 weeks longer at the far end to be able to open up. So I believe his results. And in fact, the World Health Organization was saying the same thing 2 days ago. The disease comes up fast and it's going to take a long time to, quotes, go away. Roughly, that means we can't open up for some time. And then we have to do it very, very, very carefully. And that means we need social distancing to continue. And, you know, people in California and on the East Coast are talking about, well, how do you begin to open up? Well, you begin to let some people, for example, who are now immune from the disease, go out. You begin to let more kinds of people go to restaurants or whatever. The tables at the restaurant, as Governor Newsom in California said, are further apart. But as we do that, we have to monitor in every locale because the disease is going to flare again. We are already in second waves or fears of second waves. It was happening weeks ago already in Hong Kong. We will not be, quote, safe until everybody's vaccinated, and that's a long time from now. It's 18 months to a vaccine, and then you have to vaccinate everybody, and that helps stop the spread of the disease. So we have to come out of it gradually and very, very, very carefully. But we can, and again, we can monitor in Santa Fe, or we can monitor in Hobbs, or we can monitor in some rural area in Oklahoma. As we open up gradually, is the disease starting to flare in that area? And if it's flaring, is it growing exponentially right now? If so, we have to clamp down again so the disease dies out again.
There has been talk about a seasonal resurgence, like if the rate of the spread of the disease goes down and fewer people are getting it. It passes its peak, but then it comes back when the weather gets colder. Is that true?
Well, it's certainly true for the flu. There's the flu season. So do we know yet for COVID-19 that it will be seasonal? It seems perfectly reasonable. I don't think we know.
How do you think New Mexico has been doing so far?
I think that we're doing quite well. The governor is doing a superb job. She closed us down rapidly. She has a superb response team. Just think of the problems. We have to get equipment and hospital beds to hospitals as ICUs might become filled. We have to get the ventilators that we don't have because of our president and move them around the state from areas that are hot but then cool down to other areas. That's just what Governor Cuomo was saying. Move things from New York to the next hotspot in the country. So New Mexico is gearing up to do all of that. I think it's superb.
What about on a national level? How do you think our country has done in terms of response to coronavirus?
Not very well. President Trump was a month late telling us it's a hoax. It's a Democratic hoax. It's not a disease. It's not serious. It'll go away as a miracle. He knew in January that this was coming. And basically did nothing for a month or a month and a half before he decided to close down things. His incompetence is killing people. It's killing his supporters in this state and around the country. It's just astonishing. I mean, he wanted to keep the economy open. Well, fine, that's perfectly reasonable. That didn't stop him from using all of his powers to start producing ventilators 3 months ago to ship to hospitals around the country, so that people wouldn't be dying, gasping their last for ventilators that our president doesn't take responsibility for. It's astonishing.
Anything else that you want to let people know about before we go?
Yes, there is something even bigger than this. I'm glad you asked me, Mary Charlotte. COVID-19 is not an accident. We humans have caused it. So let's pause and explain it. Our global economy is $100 trillion. It's growing at 4% a year. It's a marvel. It is the culmination of 300,000 years of human creativity. It's lifting millions from poverty. It links our nations in trade. It's how we earn our livings. It gives meaning to our lives. What we haven't put together is that it's the same global economy growing at 4% a year that's driving climate change, that's driving a mass extinction. The UN came out with a report roughly a year ago. 30 years from now, 2050, it's estimated that 1 million species will be extinct. 1 million is 20% of the standing diversity. And meanwhile, we are invading every habitat on the planet, so we're getting wave after wave of pandemics, Ebola and Zika and now COVID-19. As we emerge from this, this is actually something that's terrible and wonderful. Our species is more aware right now that we're one species than we've ever been. COVID-19 is swirling around in our 7.8 billion gene pool. We are going to have to decide, do we want to continue to grow our economy at 4% a year, often making things we don't need? My joke is purple plastic penguins for the poolside. If we do, we're going to have more climate change, more extinction events, and wave after wave of pandemics. So the crisis is, and the challenge is, civilizational in scale, global in scale, and it's existential. So we have to come together and decide, do we want to keep living like that and essentially destroying the biosphere, where we're above the biosphere, or decide that we too are children of the biosphere and we will live in some kind of harmony with it, still living wonderful lives, but not destroying it. We're going to have to all think in ways that we've not thought.
Stuart Kaufman, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to this special edition of the Radio Cafe on the Santa Fe New Mexican. I'm your host, Mary Charlotte Domondi. You can find us at radiocafe.org, and you can email me with any questions and ideas at feedback@radiocafe.org. Thanks for listening, and stay well.